All right.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melonheads of the world. Happy Friday. Wow, that was a fast week. Short week. Happy Friday, everybody. Today's February 20th, 2026. And our top story this morning, we just got some economic data just moments ago. And it wasn't great, Bob. Not great, if we're being honest here. So fourth quarter GDP, the first estimate was just released by the Bureau of Economic Analysis. The market was expecting GDP growth of 3%. What we got was GDP growth of just 1.4%. Not great, Bob. That's also down from 4.4% in the third quarter. Significant slowing of economic growth. Now, again, this is the first estimate for Q4. It's subject to change. They're going to revise it several times, but it's typically in the ballpark. The headline thing, what really drove this lower was the government shutdown. It was about 6 weeks long. A lot of GDP growth is deficit spending, right? The government's deficit right now, just the not the government budget, just the money we're spending in excess of what we're taking in, is between 6 and 7% of GDP right now. That is how hopelessly dependent our economy is on an endless expansion of debt. Without it, we would be in the steepest recession since the freaking Great Depression. That is how hopelessly dependent we are on an endless stream of just government waste to keep it looking like our economy is growing. Shut down the government for 6 weeks and economic growth virtually evaporates. But you know, there were some other things that were going on in the fourth quarter that should have taken GDP higher. A couple of things. First of all, we had a good Christmas, right? The narrative, consumer spending came on strong in like mid-November timeframe. It was a pretty good Christmas. You saw that in consumer spending growth. So that was reflected there. Obviously, data center spending, we're building these big giant data centers for no freaking reason. It's the most grotesque waste of capital in history. That is ongoing. You can see that in the investment numbers, which is part of the GDP. That was there. Metals arbitrage should have shown up in the GDP numbers. Remember back in the third quarter when we were looking at the price of silver in London was at one point like $3 higher than the price of metal here in the United States? Well, a lot of silver was being loaded on the planes and flown over to the UK in order to relieve that shortage. That counts as an export. That is a positive GDP effect, right? Conversely, in the first quarter of 2025, when all that metal was flooding into the country ahead of worries about the tariffs, we saw GDP very briefly go deeply negative because of all that gold and silver that was scrambling to get into the US before the tariffs hit, right? We should have seen the opposite of that in the fourth quarter. And yet exports were down. That's significant. U.S. exports took a pretty steep dive in the fourth quarter when you account for the fact that they should have been higher because of the metal flow out of the country. That didn't show up there. Also, tariffs almost certainly playing a role there. The trade war almost certainly playing a role in the exports declining. Look, it wasn't great. The GDP growth was anemic, I would say. It is still growing, but just barely. It obviously would have been higher without the government shutdown, but that's not a great thing because, again, that's just debt spending. Now, we also got PCE inflation was released today. PCE, that's personal consumption expenditure. That is the Federal Reserve's preferred measure of inflation. CPI tends to get more press. PCE is arguably more important when it comes to monetary policy. That came in at 2.9%. That is up from 2.8% and what the market was expecting of 2.8%. PCE inflation has risen every month since April of last year when it was 2.28%. We're now sitting at 2.90. So inflation is trending in the wrong direction. Now, let's contrast that with CPI. And before we go too far into CPI, I want to emphasize that the PCE number that we just got, that was for December. CPI in December was 2.7%. PCE came in 0.2% higher than CPI. Historically, CPI has come in a little bit higher than PCE, so that's a little bit unusual. And then in January, CPI took a dive. CPI went down all the way to 2.4%, a number I was highly skeptical of when that came out. We're seeing a significant divergence, and I'm going to show you guys in the chart, starting right around the government shutdown. We saw CPI start to head lower while PCE continued higher as it had been doing every month since April. Look, they're different organizations, slightly different data points. The CPI is put out by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, part of the Department of Labor. The PCE is put out by the Bureau of Economic Analysis, part of the Department of Commerce. And the two apparently are both representatives of the Department of Redundancy Department. But besides that, we have virtually the same measure, U.S. inflation, and we're getting diverging readings from two government entities. What the hell? The only thing I can point to is political influence in the economic data. It's ugly and it shouldn't be there, but it's hard to argue with that. All right, we also got more developments in the story from yesterday about Blue Owl Capital. Recall yesterday we talked about how Blue Owl, the poster boy for private credit and all the just horrid, horrid debt and shady things that are going on in the private credit market. Yesterday, they permanently froze redemptions of their OBDC2 private credit fund. You can never get out. All right. And they're going to keep paying out returns to people. And a lot of the returns they're paying out to people is just PIC or payment in kind, which means we're paying returns, which is just bigger IOUs from negative cash flowing companies. But I digress. Now, all the financial press yesterday, they put on a stunning display of mental gymnastics to try to explain why there was no problem in private credit and how, you know, Blue Owl freezing withdrawals is somehow a good thing when you think about it. Yeah, you got to jump through some psychological hoops to arrive at that conclusion, but they sure tried on CNBC yesterday. But a lot of people pointed to this $1.4 billion loan sale that Blue Owl made, and they got like 99.7% of face value for the debt. And everybody's like, see, look, they got face value for the debt. It's a good investment. Well, then why did they slam the door shut as soon as they did that? Because they sold what they could sell at face value, and then everything else, they locked the poor people inside with the rotten fruit. But interesting details this morning about that Blue Owl sale. It went to, of course, pension funds. The biggest pension funds in Canada and California bought it like they always do. That's like the preferred dumping ground for toxic debt garbage. But another buyer of Blue Owl's debt was an insurance company that's owned by Blue Owl. What? They bought it from themselves, and then they sent their spokespeople on to CNBC to talk about how, hey, look, people are still willing to pay face value for this debt, neglecting to mention it was their own effing insurance company that bought the debt from them. In other words, they sold this garbage debt from their left pocket to their right pocket. And we've talked about this on this channel, how private equity and private credit firms have been buying insurance companies and dumping their own toxic sludge into the holdings of those insurance companies in order to get the losses off their books. Blue Owl did that yesterday, and we didn't find out about it until this morning. But wait, there's more. We've got more Blue Owl news this morning. This one just breaking moments ago. Blue Owl has pulled out of a CoreWeave data center project right here in my backyard of Lancaster, New Jersey. Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Sorry, Jersey boy. I grew up in Jersey. Now I live in Pennsylvania. Blue Owl said, the lenders said, no, thank you. They looked at the books and said, no, we don't like the smell of things in CoreWeave's books. And guys, I have to ask you, seriously, ponder this for a minute. Just how big a pile of flaming excrement does CoreWeave's books have to be for Blue Owl to say no? Blue Owl will lend money to anybody, right? They are the private credit equivalent of Ron Burgundy's teleprompter. Anybody who asks them for money will get it, and they'll dump the debt into the pension fund. But they told CoreWeave no. Oh, my God, I just love this story. CoreWeave stock down this morning on that news. We got some more data center things going on also this morning. We got John Deere earnings. We're actually pretty good. John Deere is having a really good start to the year. Their farm business, their marquee product, is in the doghouse because of the trade war and tariffs hurting them. But the data center construction, building stuff just for the sake of freaking building stuff, see also the GDP numbers, John Deere is cashing in on that. So is their rival Caterpillar and a lot of other companies. What else did we get this morning? Oh, yeah, AMD is the latest circular financing arrangement in their deal with Crusoe. AMD had to backstop the deal by pledging to rent back any unused data center. This is exactly what NVIDIA did with CoreWeave, and NVIDIA did the same thing with Lambda Labs. We've got headline after headline of data centers getting canceled this morning and opposition and protest everywhere from Texas, Kentucky, New Jersey, now Pennsylvania. Guys, mark my words, by October, by midterms, data center will be a four-letter word. Nobody will be willing to stand in front of these things. Both political parties will be united in opposition to them. This bubble is about to burst. We got China is buying all the Russian crude that India doesn't want. Crypto platform BlockFills is for sale. That's the one that halted withdrawals last week as crypto winter persists. Open Door earnings, big revenue beat, but a $62 million loss. I don't know why. It's a home flipper with a website. That's really all that business is. But the meme stock guys, they just love that name for some reason. Also, aliens. Yeah, aliens is happening this morning. Why? I don't know. Probably maybe people weren't distracted enough from Epstein by the prospects of war with Iran. Maybe they're just like, all right, Iran didn't impress them. They're still talking about Epstein. Let's give them aliens and see if that works. Apparently, that's a thing. I kid you not. It is a busy morning, guys. We got a lot to talk about. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance today. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button, you new guys, so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads because we do this every single day. S&P 500 down 22 points or about a third of a percent right here at 8:30. This was the release of GDP and PCE numbers. The market did not like that. Stocks down a little bit this morning. The Dow is also down 130 points or a little more than a quarter of a percent lower. Again, a lot of that coming in the immediate aftermath of PCE inflation and GDP numbers. Also, the NASDAQ leading the way lower, off by more than half a percent, 137 points lower. The tech sell-off is continuing here. This headline about CoreWeave and the other headlines about Blue Owl will certainly not help that at all. The DXY, meanwhile, we've got a stronger dollar once again, 97.94, up 10 basis points. The dollar has had a pretty decent run these last couple of days. Looking over at the bond market this morning, we got a lot of green, yields moving higher. That is people selling bonds. Remember, prices and yields are inversely correlated. The 30-year Treasury is at 4.706%, higher by a fraction of a point. The 10-year yield is at 4.073. That is down by a fraction of a point. The two-year yield, 3.478%, down by almost one basis point. All right, so we got a lot of green, but it's like rounding errors, not even one basis point of moves. The only one that's actually making any real move here is the one-month, 3.694%. That's higher by two basis points. Maybe a little bit of the market worried about some hawkish Fed. That PCE data was not favorable if you're looking for more Fed rate cuts. And the fact that the 1 month is moving a bit more than everything else here, maybe some hawkish Fed feelings creeping into the thoughts of traders this morning. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got a mix of green and red this morning. Spot gold is at $5,042, up by $46 or 0.9% higher. April COMEX gold futures $5,061. That's up by $64, 1.3% higher. Spot silver is back above 80. Look at that, $80.70, higher by 2.20, 2.85% higher. March COMEX silver futures just behind it at $80.70. That's higher by $3 and a nickel, 3.94% higher. I like the shiny. Copper is pretty much unchanged here. Platinum higher by 3%. Palladium higher by 2.5%. WTI crude oil is lower by about 0.4% here, $66.13 for April WTI futures, off by about a quarter this morning. Interesting story about oil here. China snaps up distressed Russian oil cargoes shunned by India. Last week, we were talking about how India had cut as part of the trade deal with the United States that they were not going to be buying Russian oil anymore, or they were going to start their departure from Russian oil or whatever your interpretation is. And that they were going to buy Venezuelan oil instead, a deal brokered by the United States. And we've got some movement on that front this morning. Chinese refiners are snapping up Russian oil that India is shunning, helping Moscow to overcome a dip in purchases by the country that's normally its biggest buyer of seaborne barrels. Deliveries of Russian crude to Chinese ports rose to 2.09 million barrels per day in the first 18 days of February. That's according to vessel tracking data compiled by Bloomberg. The increase from 1.72 million barrels per day in January and 1.39 million in December has more than offset a drop from India. Russia's ability to find buyers for its oil is vital for the Kremlin as the war in Ukraine approaches the four-year mark, with millions of barrels building up at sea and signs that production and drilling rates are under pressure. At the same time, India's refiners have been pressed by the U.S. to eliminate crude purchases from Moscow. Although how deep and lasting the cuts are will hinge on progress of trade talks between Washington and New Delhi. Imports of Russian oil into India have remained at about 1.2 million barrels a day in recent months, down from 1.78 million in November, and about 40% below a recent peak seen in June of last year. All right, so look, we got shifting of pieces in the oil market. We had the thing that happened in Venezuela, and then we told India, hey, India, don't buy Russian oil, buy Venezuelan oil instead. And then you've got China, who used to buy Venezuelan oil, says, okay, we'll buy the oil that the Indians were buying from the Russians. We'll just get it from Russia instead. So what's really the net effect on global oil markets? Not really any, is there? It's just who's buying from who has changed. You got a shuffling of the arrangements on the board. And then I got to wonder, how does Iran fit into all this? What happens if we have things go wonky in the Strait of Hormuz and the bombs start flying? Hopefully we don't find that out, but it's looking increasingly likely. Looking over at Bitcoin this morning is $66,762, down by about $200 as shown on Coinbase. We're pretty much unchanged, a little higher than we were this time yesterday, but not by much. On the Bitcoin news, we talked about this one last week, and then we got this article in CoinDesk yesterday. Susquehanna-backed Blockfills is up for sale after a $75 million lending loss. This is the outfit that had froze withdrawals last week. They lost a lot of money, and they're putting themselves up for sale. But again, they would like to reassure everybody that their money is safe. Wink, wink. Blockfills, the crypto lender backed by trading giant Susquehanna, has incurred losses of around $75 million during the recent market downturn, according to two people with knowledge of the matter. Blockfills is now looking for a buyer, one of the people said, who spoke on condition of an anonymity. Asked about the losses, Blockfills declined to comment. Of course, they don't want to talk about their losses. Chicago-based Blockfills suspended deposits and withdrawals last week. The firm's management said in a press release on February 11th that it was working with investors and clients to achieve a swift resolution and restore liquidity to the platform, which they are yet to do. Clients have been able to continue trading with Blockfills for the purpose of opening and closing positions and spot and derivatives trading and select other circumstances. Sure, you can keep trading imaginary paper on our platform. You just can't get your money out, or you can't withdraw your Bitcoin or any of your other crypto. And now the firm is up for sale. Look, we're going to see more of these guys. This is not a very big platform, but it just does go to show you that the crypto winter blowups, it looks like they're starting as Bitcoin's price has fallen. On to the main one of the day, the GDP numbers. And this is from the BEA.gov website. Real gross domestic product increased at an annual rate of 1.4% in the fourth quarter of 2025. That is October, November, and December. I would emphasize, guys, real GDP. So this 1.4% number already reflects inflation. That is GDP growth after you account for inflation. That's the first estimate for the fourth quarter. The third quarter GDP increase was 4.4%. The advance report for the fourth quarter of 2025 was originally scheduled for January 29th. It was rescheduled due to the effects of the government shutdown. So here you can see on this chart, there's your Q4 GDP growth adjusted for inflation, down significantly from the Q3 numbers that we saw. And look at that negative number in Q1. That was all the gold and silver in the first quarter coming into the country. It actually took economic growth negative. And then, you know, it turned out there was no tariffs on metals. And so it just immediately corrected. Now, again, that Q1 metal coming into the country, that should have reversed in Q4 because of the silver arbitrage play. But when you look at this chart, you kind of see that that wasn't the case. All right, this orange bar here, there's your 1.4% total economic growth for the quarter. And then they break down the different categories. Consumer spending was a big positive. All right, we had a good Christmas shopping season that contributed almost all of the gains in GDP was from consumer spending. Also contributing was the investment category, and you better believe investment includes data center construction. All this money that we are borrowing and burning to build data centers that are, in my opinion, not needed even a little bit, regardless of what these Silicon Valley a-holes tell you about. We don't have enough compute. They say that every day, even though they have to rent it from themselves in order to get their deals done. We'll talk about that later in the show. Data center construction also contributing heavily to GDP growth in that quarter. The big negative number there was government spending down significantly quarter over quarter. That was your government shutdown being reflected in your GDP numbers. It was almost negative 1%. So GDP growth would have been a lot higher were it not for the government shutdown. And again, I look at that and I say, good, keep it shut down. If we're borrowing less money in order to create fake economic growth, maybe we should keep doing that. Shut it down again. Don't threaten me with a good time. Okay, moving on. Exports was also negative. That's interesting. See earlier commentary. Exports should have been a big positive because of the flow of metal from New York to London, kind of like exports was deeply negative in the first quarter of 2025. But whatever happened in the export market, remember the Chinese weren't buying any soybeans, at least not until the very last minute. Whatever was going on in the trade war was enough to wipe out all of the gains from metals going to London and then some to bring the export numbers negative. And imports also increased quarter over quarter, although a very small amount. Honestly, I don't really know what effect tariffs are having on these two numbers. Obviously, you know, tariffs are having an effect on both of them. How much of an effect, that remains to be seen. Also, guys, it's Friday, and we are expecting possibly any minute now announcement about tariffs and the Supreme Court. Remember, the Supreme Court could throw one giant effing monkey wrench right into the middle of this trade war narrative if they strike down the tariffs as unconstitutional. We could get that decision today. I honestly have no idea how the market is going to react to that. I'm assuming striking down the tariffs will be a positive for stocks. I don't know if that's going to happen. I'd say 50-50 right now. The judges in the Supreme Court were very skeptical. They were asking some hard-hitting questions of the administration's lawyers during this hearing. So it wasn't looking great, to be honest with you. All right. Also, PCE annual inflation, the PCE index, personal consumption expenditures, rose 2.9% in December. This is the Fed's preferred method of inflation, measure of inflation, up from 2.8% and higher than the 2.8% that the market was expecting. Inflation continues to trend in the wrong direction. And look, guys, it's been doing this since April. All right. Now, take a good look at this chart. Commit this to your memory. Look at how inflation has been rising steadily since April. Now look at the chart of CPI. Same time frame. Notice anything differently. You had CPI started to rise in April. Then we had the government shutdown. And then miraculously, CPI has been falling ever since the government shutdown. And this is one of the reasons why I raise my BS flag every time I look at the CPI statistics and I say this is highly doubtful. How can you have these two independent government agencies that are supposedly measuring the same thing producing such different results? It just doesn't make sense. I would also add that the latest CPI read of 2.4%, that was for January, and the PCE that we just got was for December. So don't compare the 2.4 from January to the 2.9 of December. If you're going to compare apples, you got to compare it to apples. The December CPI was 2.7, so still lower than PCE by a healthy clip there. All right. Meanwhile, we've got more private credit news. Blue Owl sold private loans to pension giant and their own insurer. Oh, they sold it to themselves and then went on CNBC and bragged about how much their loans were worth because people were willing to pay for this. Oh, yeah, and they also dumped it into grandma's pension fund. Oh, this is just great. Blue Owl Capital's facing a looming deadline to return cash in one of its private credit funds, found four buyers for a $1.4 billion portfolio of loans to help pay out investors. Three of North America's biggest pension funds and its own insurance fund. Chicago-based insurer Kuvare, I don't know how to pronounce that, along with California's Public Employees Retirement System, CalPERS, Ontario's Municipal Employees Retirement System, they lost billions of dollars in FTX, and the British Columbia Investment Management Corp bought the debt, according to people with knowledge of the matter. Blue Owl said late Wednesday that it sold the loans at 99.7% of par value. The sale of the loans was evenly spread across three funds and was part of a plan to return cash to investors in the firm's Blue Owl Capital Corp. II, which was hit with a wave of redemptions last year. The initial plan to return capital by merging the fund with one of the firm's publicly traded vehicles was scrapped amid scrutiny around losses that some investors would take. Yeah, they were looking at a 20% haircut if they merged those two funds. And so they canceled that. Everybody threatened to sue them. Instead, they froze withdrawals after selling some of the loans to their own freaking insurance company. Oh, you just got to love that. Citing public disclosures, the analysts also said that some of the assets being sold are likely to make their way into Blue Owl's managed collateralized loan obligations, a popular investment vehicle for insurance companies because of their high ratings and beneficial capital treatment. Those would likely be purchased by Kuvar. Unlike business development companies, which typically carry leverage of just 1x their equity, CLOs are usually leveraged 9 to 10 times, the Barclays analyst noted. It would add additional leverage to private credit assets. Oh, leverage on top of leverage in an already dog shit sector from a company that just halted withdrawals in their fund. That's just what the doctor ordered. And remember, guys, these guys are on TV bragging about how much money they just got for these loans. They sold them to pension funds, public sector pension funds, which are notorious for being careless with other people's money and are also desperate for yield, and to their own insurance company. And Blue Owl is also in the press today. They shopped debt for a CoreWeave data center and lenders weren't sold. And again, just ask yourself, how bad do things have to get when Blue Owl can't even find you a lender? Blue Owl Capital, a leading investor in data center booms, was unable to arrange financing for a $4 billion data center it is co-developing in Pennsylvania after pitching lenders to help bankroll the project in recent months. The facility, 80 miles west of Philadelphia in the city of Lancaster, will be occupied by CoreWeave, a provider of AI cloud computing services that has become a closely watched name in the AI race for its rapid expansion and billions of dollars of high-interest debt it has taken on to fuel that growth. An executive who arranges debt for major data center deals told Business Insider that the lack of interest in the Lancaster project was due to growing caution among lenders and investors about taking on sizable exposure to AI players with less than sterling credit. CoreWeave has a below investment grade rating of B+, according to S&P Global Ratings. We saw it and we passed, a senior executive at a large specialty lender told Business Insider. Remember, guys, the AI bubble is dependent on an endless stream of investment capital because all of these companies, the data centers and the AI startups that rent from them, they all lose money. So without endless investor cash, they can't keep losing money. They won't have money to lose and they'll go out of business. And somebody just told CoreWeave no. No debt for CoreWeave. No new debt for CoreWeave because they're already up to their eyeballs in debt and they just keep losing more and more money. Oh boy, this is big news. I'm sure they'll have Michael and Trader on CNBC who will put on a wonderful display of horrible body language that just screams, I am a liar, to explain why this is really good news somehow. CoreWeave down 5% on this news and falling off, trading at $92.35, which in my opinion is $92.50 too high. And look, this is not the only data center news. Look at this. These projects are dropping like flies around the country. $1.5 billion data center blocked in high-stakes Texas town showdown. This was in San Marcos, Texas. They just canceled a $1.5 billion data center project. That's Texas, all right? This is a college town in the middle of rural Texas. I would call this a purple area, all right? A college town in Texas is purple. This data center falls. Then we got data center opposition grows in Mercer County as residents voice concerns. This is people lined up at a public meeting to try to get a data center canceled in Kentucky. All right, this is redder than red Kentucky. They don't want a data center built. And then we got this one yesterday. New Brunswick City Council cancels data center plans in response to protest. This is in New Brunswick, New Jersey, where Rutgers University is. This is bluer than blue. And they don't want data centers. So what do we have in these three headlines combined? You've got redder than red Kentucky, bluer than blue New Jersey, and then purple Texas. Nobody wants data centers built. The NIMBYs on both sides of the political spectrum are all over this bubble. How will they keep this bubble inflated when they Blue Owl can't get financing for CoreWeave and nobody wants one of these things built? And I'm telling you guys, by midterm elections, it will be a contest to see who can be more opposed to data centers in their district in all of these congressional elections. Mark my words, this bubble is on borrowed time, and yet they keep just doing it. Another circular financing deal, AMD to backstop $300 million Crusoe loan, the information reports. All right, this is a small one, $300 million. Not that big of a deal, but this is AMD doing exactly what NVIDIA was doing. NVIDIA does it with Lambda and CoreWeave, and now AMD does it with Crusoe. Advanced Micro Devices is set to provide a $300 million loan guarantee for cloud computing startup Crusoe to buy and deploy its AI chips, the information reported on Thursday, following in the footsteps of rival AI giant NVIDIA. AMD backstopped the deal by offering to lease back its own chips from Crusoe if the startup is unable to secure customers such as AI developers, the information said. Where does that live on the balance sheet? These companies are making huge backstop commitments. Again, $300 million, not huge for AMD, but NVIDIA has done this to the tune of several billion dollars with CoreWeave and with Lambda Labs. Are they even tracking these massive liabilities anywhere on their balance sheets? Or does that live off balance sheet? Did they create a special purpose vehicle that's going to do that so it doesn't show up in their quarterlies? I'd sure like to know that. The loan from Goldman Sachs will be backed by the chips and related equipment, the report said. The AMD backstop allowed Crusoe to lock in an interest rate of around 6% for the loan. That's actually pretty low. Crusoe is installing AMD chips in an Ohio data center that is being built by 5C, a Canadian developer backed by Brookfield. That's a private credit lender, according to the report. More circular financing, even as data centers are dropping like flies all across the country. And then we got more meme stock news today. Open door surges. What's moving the stock? Don't get too comfy with this one, guys. Something tells me open door is going to end in tears for a lot of people. Open door technologies was rising sharply early Friday. Unexpectedly strong revenue was reawakening interest in the online home buying platform after a period when meme stock interest in its shares had faded. Open door was up 18% in pre-market trading, some way off the highs of $10 a share back in last September when they appointed new leadership. Earnings were the catalyst, or should I say lack thereof. And Open Door reported first quarter revenue of $736 million. That beat Wall Street estimates of $594 million. So a lot of revenue. However, they booked an adjusted net loss of $62 million and forecast a 10% fall in revenue in the current quarter. Wait a minute, this is being viewed as a good quarter? They lost $62 million and they're projecting revenue to decline by 10%? Okay. Skeptics have questioned Open Door's long-term viability and focus on the instant buyer market for home sellers designed to speed up transactions and avoid realtor brokerage fees. Other companies which have tried the business model, such as Zillow, have subsequently exited, finding it difficult to scale up in fragmented markets and amid the sputtering housing market. Look, guys, Open Door is a home flipper with a website. This company is stupid and it shouldn't exist and they're doomed. But right now, Open Door shareholders are having a good moment, up 15.7%, trading at $5.38, although that's about half of what it was trading at back in September. It's been a rough couple of months. Again, this company doesn't make money. And if you ask me, the housing market isn't about to improve. I don't know how these guys reported so much revenue. Are they selling homes? Who's buying them? Because everything I see says home sales are frozen in place. And this is just a business model that simply does not scale. Flipping homes, you can't flip homes remotely from a central headquarters to places all over the country. It just doesn't work that way. Meanwhile, John Deere stock is having its best month in 50 years as the tractor maker rides the AI boom. Let's talk about this one here, guys. Shares of John Deere are headed for yet another record on Thursday after the maker of tractors and lawn care equipment blew past fiscal first quarter earnings expectations as profits in its construction business more than doubled. All right, and by the way, going all the way back to those GDP numbers, there's your investment category into GDP growth. All right, profits from construction equipment because of data center construction, that lives right here. You can see it in GDP, and you can see it in John Deere's earnings. The company also provided 2026 sales growth outlook showing each of its business segments outperforming the industries in which they operate, even as profitability in Deere's global large agricultural business is being hurt by tariffs and higher warranty expenses. All right, so this is important. Their marquee product, the agricultural equipment, that is being hurt here, but their construction business is booming. For the quarter ended February 1st, net income fell 24.5% from a year ago to $656 million. Again, tariffs and the ag business probably responsible for that decline in net income. While that marked the ninth straight quarter of year-over-year declines in net income, wait, I thought this was a good quarter. 9 consecutive quarters of declines in net income. Earnings per share for the quarter were $2.42, came in well above estimates of $2.02. Total revenue grew 13% to $9.61 billion, beating the estimates of $9.12 billion. Deere said sales for its construction and forestry business surged 33.9% to $2.67 billion, beating expectations of $2.34 billion, and operating profit for the business jumped 110% to $137 million. They more than doubled their construction business. All right, we're building so many data centers that freaking John Deere stock is rallying. That followed 27% growth in sales in the previous quarter, which snapped a six-quarter streak of year-over-year declines. And look at the year John Deere has had. All right, now this is interesting. The stock, okay, it was up about 11% yesterday. Those earnings were reported yesterday. So you can see the big green candle there from yesterday. Now the stock is giving back some of those gains, 1.1% lower. But look at the start to the year John Deere has had. This is the year-to-date chart. It's up 42% in, what, 7 weeks? John Deere stock has been ripping on this data center construction boom. And again, you know, it, look at a five-year chart. John Deere stock has done a whole bunch of nothing for years. They had a pretty good 2025, 2026 wasn't so, or they had a pretty good 2024. They traded sideways in 2025, and 2026 is just off to the races. I don't think this one is going to last, though. As these data center projects get canceled and they have trouble lining up financing, things are only going to get worse. Aliens. We also got aliens. That's happening, apparently. Trump to order U.S. agencies to release documents on extraterrestrial life. I don't know what is going on. Maybe it's Epstein. Maybe they're trying to distract from Iran. I don't know. But aliens is like the soup du jour red herring. If there's something going on in the government that you don't want people to notice, just leak some video of a fighter circling a balloon or an alien. And look, there's been a lot of talk about this. Are we alone in the universe? Probably not. Statistically unlikely. That being said, like, you know, we're about to have a war, and let's talk about aliens right as this Epstein thing is going global. Can't help but be curious about the timing. And guys, I just also want to add that, again, we're still waiting on the tariffs ruling from the Supreme Court. It could come at any minute. I'm just looking at that little red line above on the top of the screen there on CNBC. As traders await possible tariff court decision, we still don't have that one. That will be big news when it comes out. Hey, I just want to say thank you very much to Jolly Lollipop One says, I am sick of opening Yahoo Finance and always being forced to look at a photo of NVIDIA's CEO. I implore you to use your clout to rectify this, nobody. Yeah, you know what was it they said on Gamers Nexus? It was hilarious. He said, Jensen Huang looks like a dead alligator dipped in crude oil. That just cracked me up. I freaking love Gamers Nexus. That channel is fantastic. And I don't even play video games. I just think the guy is hilarious. And they're taking cheap shots at Jensen Huang. So, sure, I can get down with that. I'm sick of seeing it, too. I'm sick of the demand is insane. And, there just isn't enough compute, even though, right, everybody, we all know now, right? We're not even pretending. They're buying it from themselves. All right. Is there anybody out there still pretending that this isn't just one giant circle jerk? Right. I mean, I realize it started as a Twitter rando conspiracy theory. But, you know, it's the 2020s. And like I told you back when they called me a rando for the first time, I said calling it a conspiracy theory is like daring it to be true. And yeah, it's all true. So honestly, I think we are going to see Jensen Huang on the cover of Yahoo Finance for years and years and years. However, there will be a shift. Instead of him signing boobies at a conference and having Chinese reporters fawn over him, I think we're going to see him in a courtroom or in handcuffs or artist sketches of Jensen Huang breaking down in tears at his sentencing because he is responsible for the biggest accounting fraud in human history, and they just won't acknowledge it until the losses start showing up, which could start any day now, in my opinion. Thank you, Jolly Lollipop, for supporting the channel. Thank you, Metal Seer, as well. He's been a Melonhead for a year now. Gotta brag. Picked 12 of past 14 NSF mugs. He's hot. Well, past performance is no indicator of future returns, Metal Seer. So don't get so confident. Don't be so proud of this. Well, I got to admit, that's pretty crazy, right? You got a coin flip and you got, what, three possible colors? And you got 12 out of the last 14? I am no statistician, but I would imagine that's actually a highly unlikely scenario. 12 out of 14 in a row. Have you detected a pattern in my subconscious thinking when I reach for a mug in the morning? If so, please fill me in on what that pattern is. I'd love to hear more about it. Yeah, people take bets on the color of my mug in the chat here. Hey, man. I love you guys in the chat. You guys are awesome. Thank you, Metal Seer, for supporting the channel. John Cook, 8238, says, Theta's network doesn't need data centers because it is decentralized. Smartphones, computers are edge nodes. I don't know anything about Theta. Never touched the stuff. Guys, when it comes to crypto, Bitcoin is the only thing I touch. So I can't comment one way or another. Bitcoin is the only one that has survived multiple crypto winters and continued to make new highs. Nothing else has done that time and time again. So can't comment on that, but I can say thank you very much, John Cook, for supporting the channel. Doug Williams, 2194, says, it is rare that I'm able to catch a live stream, so I wanted to take this opportunity to say I always enjoy your content. Keep up the good work, Jack. Well, thank you, Doug. I appreciate that very much. Thank you for supporting the channel. Thank you for tuning in, whether live or recorded. Either way, I'm grateful for your time, sir, and I'm glad you're enjoying the show. Thank you very much. Nacho Man gifted 20 Nobody Special Finance memberships. Welcome, you 20 baby melon heads. Be sure and say thank you to Nacho Man in the chats. And a reminder, guys, you get one free super chat every month with that membership. Use that. I will read and respond to your questions, thoughts, comments, concerns live on the air. And, well, while you're thanking Nacho Man, you better thank Uncle Fedster as well, because he gifted 5 memberships too. So if you got one of those memberships, who's to tell if it was Nacho or Uncle Fedster? You might as well thank them both. Thank you very much, guys, for supporting the channel. Welcome to the Melon Patch, you baby melons. And thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with we melon heads once again this morning. Don't forget that like button on the way out and that subscribe button. Supreme Court decision any second now. Watch for that one. What else? Oh, thank you very much for the super chats and the generosity, as well as my magnanimous melon heads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee. Links down below. Today is the day. Our get together once a week at 2 p.m. for a Q&A on Zoom. We will be doing that. Looking forward to that this afternoon. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys, everybody. Till next time, live small and dream big.